Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, before we welcome our guests to the show, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the folks over at Markham Search LLC, who make today's show possible. They've recently launched a new payrolling program, which offers payrolling services around the United States for any companies, corporations out there that might have temporary staff that they would prefer to have on another company's payroll. So please keep Markham Search LLC in mind for all of your payrolling needs. Today we have with us on the show Frederick Lucas Conwell. Frederick is a behavioral scientist and serial entrepreneur who is passionate about what motivates people in the workplace. He is a recovering engineer who bootstrapped his first company at a young age and grew it with VC funding, making all the people mistakes imaginable along the way. That's when he turned to organizational behavior. He co-founded Growth Resources and the GRI system in 2012 to transform recruitment and talent management. The GRI includes online tools, a revolutionary proprietary behavioral survey, and methodologies licensed to its customers. With more than 20 years of experience in organizational behavior, Frederick has consulted with companies of all sizes, from startups to Global 500, on organizational management, recruitment, leadership, development, as well as hundreds of seminars for executives, managers, and HR professionals across five continents. Frederick is the author of two books, Lead Beyond Intuition and Discover the Best in You. He is a regular speaker at Stanford, Watermark, and SV Forum. Frederick holds a PhD in organizational behavior with honors from the University of Paris Dauphine, France. He lives in Palo Alto, California, with his family, dog, and parrot. Thank you so much, Frederick, for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Jennifer.
So tell our listeners a little bit about this evolution of your career. How did you go from being an engineer to somebody who has a PhD in organizational psychology?
Well, thank you for asking. And it's kind of an inverted curriculum, it looks like. So I started, being a CEO of a company at 26, after working in France and Japan for a few years. And I wanted to start my company and said to myself, I'm not going to wait for 50 years old to do that. And there are plenty of ideas to start. Let's do it. And so this is how I started. Eventually, I was unconscious and young. I wouldn't say stupid, but I thought when you start a company, you think you are smart in something, and so then you grow and quickly you hire some people and you get some VC financing, and the company grows beyond what you expected first, and so I acquired a larger organization. Which was four times bigger than my first one. And so I ran into people aspects very quickly, spending most of my time, not so much in engineering, even production or finance or marketing, but having to spend most of my time in recruiting, in firing, in organizing teams. And it was a bit mysterious what made a good salesperson a good salesperson. And all the aspects of management where you can be frustrated because you couldn't anticipate and what's going on. So this is how I got to management pretty quickly. And after I sold my company, I decided to pivot into organizational behavior after experiencing different tools at that time, which were assessing personality in different ways. That was the early stage of Myers-Briggs. It was in the late 1980s, 1990s. It will tell you a little bit about my age, not just my original culture. And so I found these techniques fascinating, not just because you could assess things faster than from your own guts, but also because there was a lot of work going on. And so some early techniques in the 1970s, 80s disappeared, were replaced by some others. And the even more recent ones were replaced by new ones. And so there was a constant flux of innovation into that field. And so this is how I decided to do a PhD in organizational behavior, studying more intensely all these personality aspects and digging more into the subject matter. PhD meaning finding high and deep, and this is really what I did for 4 years. I was married at that time and had four daughters, and so that was additional work to everything I was doing. And after setting my company, first company, I started another one, which was in consulting on organizational behavior and leadership development. So I grew that activity, brought into it all these personality aspects and assessments, and sold it to my associates when I moved to the States. That was in 2005. And at that time, I wanted to combine some results and discoveries I had been working on during all this PhD thing, and the technology that was growing also at high speed here in Silicon Valley. And so this is all, I created a GRI in 2012 in order to bring those two aspects of my career into something that's called the GRI for taking better, more objective information into organizations and in very different subject matter. So that's very quickly how I got to that.
Wow. I mean, that is no small undertaking to pursue a PhD in that subject. And so what did you discover when you went and got your PhD and when you delved into this? Tell me a little bit about what it was that kind of had you come up with this GRI system that you then created.
So yes, a PhD is not a small world. it's a lot of work, and like writing a book, it's a lot of work. So it was a lot of work, and you spend typically in the social science, one year trying to figure out what you are going to research. And so it always started with a general questions, which you refine into a specific question, which takes additional year. So there's a lot of reading and exploration of the field, interviewing, you take notes on a lot of things. So, and at the same time, you dig deep into some material, into some other works in the academic field. So this is a lot of work, so a lot of exploration, a lot of writing. And so what I discovered in the middle of that gets back to what I just said, which is this personality field was evolving very quickly. And what used to be known as the Myers-Briggs and DISC and Enneagram, there are tons of things out there, we're refining into something that could have a different impact. So that was the first take from this research. The other one was about the CEOs, executives that I was interviewing. I interviewed more than 1,000 people in 500 companies worldwide. So that was a lot of work, a lot of notes. And so I realized that the experience I had managing people was shared by so many other CEOs and executives, and it was not a small job. I mean, and there were still a lot of issues, and which started from how executives, how we assess people, generally speaking. And so the biases we are subject to when we assess people. So that was a big observation, and that it takes many years, not a few days or several weeks, but many years to refine your intuition or the quality of your decision on people. So that was the other big discovery, which in fact I wrote about into this book, Lead Beyond Intuition.
Yeah, it's interesting. Having been somebody in my role who's been doing this for about 15 years, and I'm sure for anybody out there who's been in a managerial role in any capacity in a company, there is something to be said. Every time that you make a bad hire, it can cost a company hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially in retraining fees, lost time. It's a really big cost and expenditure. My question, though, to you would be, how do we know that something like, for example, whether it's your type of assessment or Myers-Briggs or DISC, how does that not cause us to be biased in a different way against somebody because we're kind of compartmentalizing somebody? You're an ENFJ or you're a driver in the DISC profile. How do we know that these are actually helping us? Have we seen statistically greater longevity in jobs where you utilize these assessments, or what has been kind of the protocol to be able to see the long-term efficacy of something like this?
Yes, I mean, starting with the protocols, so the protocols have been evolving. And so I would say 30 years ago, 20 years ago, the protocol was doing some correlational studies, which proved to be insufficient and not revealing the other benefits of these kind of techniques. So I can get back to that. But first, what we know, working with the DISC and the Myers-Briggs is, and looking at the history of these techniques, I mean, Myers-Briggs was never developed for work application. It was made out of some work from Carl Jung in 1928, refined by Myers and Briggs in 1940s. And, they added one more dimension to the three early dimensions thought out by Jung. And Jung was a marvelous writer, marvelous thinker. And Myers and Briggs did an amazing work, and the marketing done on the Myers-Briggs was brilliant. But then when you look at it, the dimensions were never thought or devised to be work-related, which is a little problem when you want to make use of this technique into recruitment, because it's good to have something better than a crystal ball, to look at people, and that looks a bit more scientific. But at the end, what the Myers-Briggs measures is not really, in fit with what we really need at work. Right? And again, it's good to entertain a discussion, and whatever is may be good to entertain a discussion. And so Myers-Briggs may be better than other. It's a good medium, but again, the limitations are clear in these days. And so very similar to DISC. DISC was devised out of another technique called the AVA by Walter Clark in the 1940s. DISC is eventually better at assessing what they are assessing. So we have a better understanding of what's measured, how it's measured, and this construct of personality and what it is and what it is not. Okay? So there have been a lot of research. And so before doing any kind of correlations, the thing is, what are we exactly assessing here? And so that's where we started, so to speak, with the GI assessments, because basically you don't need 1 hour to assess what needs to be assessed in this behavioral personality component that we're assessing. And we have just two questions. We don't need more than two questions. And what we know is that there are four core dimensions of personality, not five, not even three. But there's a large consensus today into the limited number of dimensions we need to assess on people. And that's pretty recent, up to very recently, and still, as you may know, in recruitment, there are still a lot of techniques assessing traits. And it may be 20 traits or 30 traits or 40 traits. And the Clifton strength is assessing, I think, 32 or 34 of these types or strength, they call it. So, but what we know is when you assess those many traits, there's a strong overlap. And so when you remove, the crap, so to speak, you get to those core dimensions of personality, and which is where science has been leading, the discussion for the past, I wouldn't say even a couple of decades, but recent years. Okay, and there's a huge consensus today that there are a very limited number of core dimensions that you can find on any individual, whether it's a man or woman or, a person from specific culture or people of different ages. And so it's not specific to a segment of a population, but to general population. And so this is what we have in the GRI. And again, this is something which is recent. The other thing that's recent in personality assessment and research is we are very clear now that we can flex our personality, our emotional patterns, so to speak, or behaviors to a certain degree. And so there's something which is consistent, which is really interesting, in fact. So we are not changing that much in terms of what we can assess on these core dimensions. But we can flex because we all need to adapt. When we recover, we get back to this natural status, so to speak. So this is an important finding that we have known about for many years, but we are very clear about what needs to be assessed again, and this adaptable nature of what we're assessing. Okay? So that's the two big things in personality. And so all these techniques, Myers-Briggs and Enneagram and many others, haven't built on those more recent discoveries. And so consequently, so their assessment is a bit more, you know, blurry, and thus, you know, this soft aspect of, you know, what it looks like. We're actually in a better position to do something that's more work-related and that you can trust the results. So that's part of the answer. You know, I could speak endlessly about this. You know, how it benefits from organizations, first, you know, to people, because, you know, having some good, sound, trustable, reliable over time information about who you are, you can better say yes and say no and drive your career, or, you know, not applying to you, applying to others, better understand how people function and trust, you know, those measurements, and also build trust into the relationship thanks to these measurements.
I agree with you completely, Frederick. In fact, there's something I learned about years ago that's less Myers-Briggs or DISC, but along the same lines, called it's gemstones, emeralds, rubies, sapphires, and pearls. Did you ever study those?
Which is it? Sorry, can you repeat?
It's emeralds, rubies, sapphires, and pearls. And from what I understood, and I find it interesting, and I would love to know the four personality types that you were saying that mm-hmm. science is now based on, because from my mm-hmm. own observations, what I've noticed is you have the people who, what I was taught, are called emeralds. The emerald mm-hmm. personality, it needs facts. If you have somebody who is predominantly emerald and you're trying to put them in a job where it's not fact-based, it's going to set mm-hmm. that person up for failure, as opposed to what perhaps DISC would call the driver, or this other personality profiling would call the ruby. The ruby personality is going to be more dynamic and driven and not going to do as well following specific instructions, but is going to be better in a leader role, as opposed to somebody who is more perhaps driven by facts or driven by a group role where they're not at the forefront. Is this kind of somewhat in alignment with what you found?
You know, yes, absolutely. I mean, I didn't know about this, you know, ruby and, you know, other precious, you know, stones here, gems analogy. I'm more used to the color system, but there are a lot mm-hmm. of systems this way.
Very
and,
similar.
If not colors or, you know, gems, it's something. Which help also people to remember and anchor, you know, their understanding of others. So, you know, so all of that has been refined. This is what, you know, I mentioned before. We call them factor 1, 2, 3, 4 for the right, you know, purpose, that we don't want to bias the understanding of what's behind those factors. And we measure those core components in a very refined way. So what I mean is, there's nothing like being just an introvert or extrovert, or just be, you know, a specific gem. There is intensity in behavior. And so some people are more intense in displaying and experiencing some behaviors than some others. And so this is what we bring in a very nuanced way. What's the intensity of your behavior? It can be a very sociable person, an extremely sociable person, a kind of moderately sociable person. And all these core dimensions also interact with each other. So like with a ruby, you know, you can have different rubies at the same time and different colors. And so all of these core dimensions kind of mix in something that we have created. You know, it's a little abstract, but it's pretty, in fact, to understand and and learn about these profiles, which were drawing, which are a symbolic representation of how people perform, you know, how they work, how they adapt. And so we have something which is in a nutshell on a symbolic representation that allows to be much more nuanced than working with typologies.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's like you said, you want to get away from the biases, and you also want to support employers on finding the right candidates and making better hiring choices. But at the same time, you want to make sure that the job seeker, the candidate who is out there looking, doesn't take the wrong job, because then it can be a lose-lose situation for both parties. So tell me a little bit in your research what you found, how this benefits the job seeker to have implemented these assessment tools.
So when you get more granular about behavior and work, you realize that different work requires different behavior. And for instance, you know, being an accountant requires different behavior than being in client service, for instance. The behavior we observe on nurses is different than one we observe on trial lawyers, for instance. So different jobs display or require different behavior. And so we have different techniques to assess that. One is to look at those who are in the job, which we do for very small and very large organizations. And so you get to observe some commonalities in those behaviors in different jobs. And so we have done it for many different jobs at this point. We have done it also for entrepreneurs here in Silicon Valley, where there's a typical profile for entrepreneurs. And what I mean by typical is that 75% of the time you find a similar pattern, which is really interesting, because there's still the 25% remaining who are succeeding in very different ways, but there's a typical profile that emerges from those different jobs or different occupancies. So this is how we build the GI, not just looking at people, but also looking at the job. We know today that, for instance, leadership expresses itself in very different ways. There was the transformational leadership, which was everything 20 years ago. Now it's more the servant leadership. And so there are different ways to express leadership. And so we brought also all that science into, looking at people and looking at the job. So it's important for recruiters, and back to your question, not just look at candidates in abstract, but look at candidates in connection to the job. And typically there is no consensus from the organization and the recruiters or the executive search about what's really required in terms of those behaviors. And so that's one of the first work we do with our clients. I mean, we train our clients to make use of this methodology, so we don't do it for them, but we help them be more granular and get a consensus about what's required in the job. Because if there is no consensus on the job, there is no consensus on how to interview the candidate. There is no consensus on how to onboard the candidate. There is no consensus on how the candidate is going to be managed. And so most of the time it goes berserk, like I say, because different people have different expectations, and the candidate doesn't even know what's going on.
Yeah, and it causes for a lot of turnover, and particularly in today's market where it's already a high enough turnover market just because of the volatility post-recession. I think that whatever employers and job seekers can do to find some semblance of stability is something that could be very valuable in the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is how we see what we're doing used by companies and job seekers as well at the same time. Our clients make use of it in recruitment, not just to be better informed before the interview, but also better run the interview and inform the candidates about who they are and what they need and how they are going to be onboarded and work with the team, and share this information with the manager and share the information with the team so that everyone get to know each other faster than having to wait 6 months or 1 year for a team building. And so that's how, because typically candidates don't know who they are, especially when they are young, and millennials and Gen Z now more than others, they have high expectations not to go and suffer like their parents did, and be better understood faster and get to understand who they are faster. So there's a speed which is acting in the job market today, and into companies to fasten this process of get to know who you are, but not just who you are, but also who your teammates are and how you are going to be successful in your job. And so this is how that information is brought as early as possible into the process.
I love that. And so I know you offer this service to companies. Is this something that job seekers can have access to with respect to your particular programs, or is it something that would only come to a job seeker when a company that you're working with would request it prior to an interview?
So more recently, we decided to offer the experience of taking GRI to everyone and who has to pay a little bit. No, we cannot do it for free. There's a lot of work behind that, and there's also a service we provide with a connection of the results, and we bring a book also to inform the candidate about, you know, the person taking the survey about what it is and where it's coming from, and so there's always, you know, the full experience of taking the survey and getting the results, and so that's something we offer now from our website, and I can offer to those listening here, you know, within the coming week, you know, a discount on this one. But typically, it's done through our clients who invite candidates and who invite their employees to take the survey. We typically don't sell the survey. What we sell is a service where we want absolutely that, you know, our clients make a good usage of everything we're doing. And so we license our technologies, tools, including the survey on jobs, on people. And so making sure and providing the support also for making sure that, you know, everything is properly used. So our concern is also that, you know, everything is in good hands and that those who are making use of it are capable to, you know, take the information properly to all the situation they can.
Yeah, I love that. And I think for job seekers, I get many inquiries more than in the past years for people who are looking to transition careers. And I find things like, for example, Myers-Briggs or other online personality tests give you a very broad picture of maybe something you could do. But it sounds like if people were to take this test, does it tell them what jobs they would be suited for? Or is it more of an overall what you're good at? How is it broken down if somebody were to take it on there as a job seeker?
So we provide first, you know, some information about what motivates you, what's your drive, how you communicate, and where what we call the inverted drive, where it's going to be challenging. Okay? Then in the book, we discuss a little bit more where we find those behaviors, and so kind of giving some directions. And you know, understanding how it works, it makes a lot of sense that if you want to have some social interaction, you know, if you want to be an accountant, it's going to be tough, or you're going to do that limited number of years. At some point, you will want to, you know, have this social interaction that you need on a more regular basis than just going with friends after work and crushing numbers day after day is not something you are going to have fun with. So there are some, you know, evident you know, aspects of it that we deliver within the book. For being more specific, there is more to say, and we engage a discussion on those aspects, which is look at your manager, you know, if you are going for a job, because you know, this is an important aspect. You need to be understood. You need to get support. You need to understand who you are, but make sure that others understand also how you function. Because if they don't, it's going to be a nightmare, eventually. So this is providing also some advices along that line, not just the job, but you know, you need to have some interest in what you are doing. You need to be understood. You need to be also, you know, you have to grow and continue growing this interest into your job. So how this is going to happen, better understand what you need and make sure that others understand it, because this is how the interest is going to pick. This is how so your performance is going to grow, and don't expect others to understand it if first you don't understand yourself, you know, about how you function.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's wonderful. Now, I know you mentioned there's a way that our listeners could do it. Do you want me, after the show, we can leave a little discount code on the recap of the show of how people might be able to do that in the next week? Or if you have any sort of code that you want people to put in, you're welcome to share it.
No, absolutely. And so they have to go on on our website, gri.co, gri.co. And there is something, you click on the homepage to take the survey. And by entering a code, which is JOBGRI, J-O-B-G-R-I, in uppercase, G-O-B-G-R-I in uppercase, they would get a 30% discount on the survey.
Oh, that is amazing. I think that's a wonderful value add, because I don't know about our listeners out there, but I love understanding myself better. And we do something similar before we onboard our own team members. And I think it's really important for all managers and all people who work with their managers, to your point, Frederick, to understand one another. How am I designed as a manager? What can I provide you with? What can't I provide you with? Who else can you go to in the organization to get what you need? And as I was just leading a kind of think tank last week in Orange County with a lot of leaders, we were saying you shouldn't hire somebody, no matter how good they are, if you can't provide them with what they need, because otherwise you're setting them up for failure.
Absolutely. I just, you know, completely agree with what you said. And absolutely. And especially in the job market of today, where people have different options, and if they're not happy in a job, they will go somewhere else.
Exactly, especially in today's market. Well, you and I could talk all day long about this, but tell me, are there any points or any takeaways that you would love our listeners to take away from today's show about what we've been discussing?
Well, I invite them to read more about the subject matter. There are different books I wrote. One is Discover the Best in You, that they can find on Amazon, and the experience of the survey. It will provide them with some interesting new understanding of how they can better function and what they need to expect from the environment. And so they can go onto our website, also gri.co, sorry, and get some understanding of what we are doing, not just for individual contributors, but also for managers, executives. We train CEOs to the GRI. And so there's a lot also to do for executives and, of course, recruiters and HR experts. People have different needs in respect to talent management, and encouraging them to dig deeper. There's so much more we need to do in these days. And it's a kind of middle age when you look at the landscape and the numbers, which are so bad in terms of how people get engaged and perform the job. So there's a lot to do, and we want to be part of what will happen in the future, and invite everyone to get to know the GRI.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. And one more time, if you can just tell our listeners what the coupon code was, just so they can use that if and when they want to take the test for helping them transition into a new job.
So the code is JOBGRI, J-O-B-G-R-I in uppercase. And I will give it to you after the show, Jennifer, and you can put that on the website. It's valid for 1 week, so until next Monday.
Perfect. Well, great. I will be sure to promote it on our Facebook page as well. So on Facebook, we have our Get Yourself the Job page, where we often share information like this and recaps of shows like today's show. And I'll be sure to share this with all of our listeners who tuned in today. Thank you so much, Frederick. It's been so fascinating to learn about this. I think that this is the future of job hunting. It's no longer just sending out a resume and hoping something sticks. I think AI is the future, and the more that we can all find jobs that we love and have it be more seamless, the better off we will all be.
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer, for having me and the interview.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. I definitely intend to take the survey myself and learn something new about myself. And thank you so much to everybody out there who tuned in, whether you're perhaps a manager looking for how you can help better lead your teams, or a job seeker who might be out there thinking about, gosh, what do I want to do with my life? And how could knowing a little bit more about my personality help me to be more successful in any role, even your current role, perhaps? So thank you again to Frederick. And as a reminder, if you missed any portion of today's show, you can find it later in the week on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes, or you can also find it on the latalkradio.com page under the Get Yourself the Job show page. At the bottom of our Get Yourself the Job show page, you will find an archive of this show shortly available after the show, as well as any prior shows that we've done. So thank you so much, Frederick. It's been a pleasure learning more about this and speaking with you.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Have a wonderful day, everyone.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.